Sports Car Unleashed.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Car Unleashed. I'm your host this week, Rich Hall. With me, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Chad Casey. Chad, another week, brother.
Two in a row, man. We're back.
We're getting back in the swing of things, brother.
Oh, it feels good to be back again.
Yeah, it does, man. It does. And we got a return guest on. We got a good show for you guys.
One of our all-time favorites who we're going to add a little twist to the interview, I think, this week. I think it's going to be...
The old IMSA fan...
A little Q&A session from them, yeah. There's been some feedback from our group of friends, so...
Hang on to your hats.
Yeah. Do a little news. We got a couple of races to sort of pre-preview, since we've got a couple up coming up here real soon, and then...
Indeed we do.
Some page two fun, so... I'm ready to jump in if you are.
Dude, I was born ready.
Here we go.
Hey, race fans, you're listening to Sports Car Unleashed. This is the Owen Magic Man Trinkler. Now you see me, now you don't.
All right, we're getting into the guest segment of the show. And, of course, we have another great guest for you this week. A returning guest, driver of the number 33 CJ Wilson Porsche Cayman GT4 and the number 33. See something going on here, folks? Riley Motorsports Viper GT3R, Mark Miller. Mark, how you doing, man?
I'm good. You did a good job with that. At least the number's the same. That's why I was confusing.
You know what? See, that's why I like you. You make things simple for us.
Yeah, I try to keep it easy. I had to pull some strings to keep the 33 on both cars, you know. Since they were both 33 last year too.
How did that happen?
Ben Keating, his number has been 33. Mm-hmm. So CJ's number in baseball is 33, and he wanted 33 on the car. Originally it was 36. I think it went from 33 to 36 and then back 33 again. So it just seems to work. When they were entering the cars for this year, our team manager for CJ Wilson Racing, his name is Andreas Lavens. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and he goes, I think I was just going to keep the numbers 3 and 5 again. And I was like, well, it'd be really nice for CJ to have that 33, since that's his number, and we can do the other cars 35. And he goes, well, that's not a bad idea, but secretly it's just because I want to only remember one number. It's a lot easier that way.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, man. Let's talk about the newest 33 in your life, the Cayman, Darth Cayman, as it were. How has that program come along for you guys? You still get that new car smell?
Fairly well, actually. I mean, we're still like any of the Cayman teams, which there's it's a growing list. Mm-hmm. We're still getting used to the car. We're still trying to make adjustments to it to make it work, not just on the Continental tires, but in our series as well. It's hard for people to realize initially that car was designed specifically as a spec GT4 car to be run like in VLN in Europe and with non-adjustable shocks at a certain ride height and with a certain tire type. So it was designed around those tires, and when we come to the U.S. and run the Continental Tire Series, and we put the Contis on it, they're smaller diameter. So that changes everything. We have to still meet a ride height rule, which means we have to raise the ride height, and that's why you see a little bit more of that wheel gap in between the top of the tire and the fender wells as compared to, like, the European counterpart. Or one of the cars that was specifically built for the Porsche Club of America, which is a very similar, if not the same car. They're just allowed to run on a different tire brand. And, we've done a lot with the car so far with trying to find a shock package that works well at that ride height with the Contis and just going through systematically and changing the things that we need to change Porsche has been really, really helpful on the front, but we also got the cars really late in the year. I mean, we got them in December, and our first test was less than 30 days after we got it delivered. It's, I think it was actually 2 weeks. So at Daytona, you could see that we still struggled with fuel stops and to make sure that we can – I mean, that's what really we struggled with the most. We had a really great opportunity to come away with the first win for Porsche there, and same for Sebring, but it just didn't go our way. But we're slowly picking away at the things that we need to change to make sure that the car is super reliable, which – Porsche has a long history of that, as well as really well balanced. And for us, it really comes down to pit stop sequence and making sure everything is super smooth and easy to get in and out of the pits, and all the systems are in check. And we still are, we don't even have a pit speed limiter yet. So we're still trying to develop all the software to work with, communicate with the ECU to be able to do all the things that all those other teams are able to do or have been able to do for years, you know, like Rumbum and Multimatic, and, you know, they have things in place that are really helping them be efficient in and out of the pits. And that's where we struggle the most.
Now, has it surprised you at all the speed you guys have had? Because at the Roar test, you guys were at the top of the charge. And then, like you said, at Daytona, you guys were as quick as anybody. And even at Sebring, I mean, the pace has been instantaneous, even with everything that you've had to overcome with the car to this point.
Well, I think a lot of that was kind of known in a way. The car is, at this point, it's the most underpowered, but it's also the lightest. It has, it's the only car, I believe, in the series right now that has a paddle shift, which is the Porsche's PDK system. So it's a six-speed unit. It's the seven-speed box with the seventh deleted, basically. So it's a six-speed. It's a better gear ratio than what we had in our 911 last year as far as gear spacing, in my opinion, but it makes less power. So I think a lot of that, Daytona was a big surprise for us because we didn't expect to go there and be on pace. But, you know, when people go to the test there, historically, they're pulling information. They're not there to run as fast, the fast laps and burn down new sets of tires and try to run qualifying pace. They're like, for us, we were out there working on systems and trying to figure out what the car is good at, what it's not good at, and just kind of working through that. And when we went back to Daytona for the race, I think we settled out pretty well, but it was wet and rainy all the way leading up to that. And as you saw in the race in the dry, we did not have the pace to win the race, you know, at the end. Danny did an awesome job at the beginning of the race. But if you look at outright pace, the Mustangs and the Rumbum car were still the fastest cars. We just, in that final heat when everybody was starting to, you know, slow down on older tires, that's when he was able to make his move and just kind of hang in the draft and then make that move to go to the lead. And that's what we were planning on through the whole thing is like, listen, if this race goes long under a lot of green flags, we're the lightest car, we don't have the most power, but we're great under brakes, great through the infield, very similar to what I'm used to in years with running with CJ's team in ST with the Mazda MX-5. It's the same kind of thing. But if you look on coming out of the bus stop and on the front straightaway, we're down a few miles per hour, but certainly it's the acceleration to get there is where we're struggling the most. But you go to Sebring, and it's a whole different track altogether, especially it was hot. You know, we really had a good opportunity under braking there. The car's light, so it really will maintain a good pace under long green flag runs. And you saw a Porsche GT4 come out on top. Unfortunately, it wasn't our team, but it was good to see and, you know, the capabilities of the car. We showed great pace, but just had really bad racing luck with contact with another car, which kind of put us out of the opportunity to win on pace. And it was a handful after that. So, but still a great experience. learned a lot for that race to come back and go into the third race of the season with hopefully a shot at, you know, another podium.
Now, with the car being so new and really well populated within the class, are the Porsche teams working together, sharing information, pooling everything to expedite the learning curve, or is it still a little bit more of everybody sort of for themselves?
You know, I'd like to say so, but not really. It's, you know, we do communicate, I think, but if you walk in a paddock, you'd know that, you know, you could look at the shock packages and just about every one of the GT4 Cayman have a different shock package. And it's fortunate in a way, but unfortunate in a way. And I think we'd all come up to speed a lot faster if we all worked together. But at the same time, you don't want to be the last Porsche team to get up to speed. So we're all working really hard among our own organization to fix any issues that we have internally, and doing the best we can on our own before we start to reach out and finding out what's working for other people. I think we have a really strong team and on an engineering and development level, and I think all of our drivers are quite good at that and getting up to speed quickly and giving good feedback. So I think for the most part, you know, that's where we're going to focus most of our energy, but certainly we're looking at what the other teams are doing and how that can make us better and, you know, overall, because we all have to be doing that. And it's good that we have so many club sports in the series because of that.
Yeah. Now, Mark, moving on to your WeatherTech ride. Pretty interesting season for you so far with the Viper and Riley Technologies. Where are you guys at as opposed to where you thought you were going to be at the start of the season with the car?
With the Viper?
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you, I'm the young rookie driver, the old young rookie driver on the team. So, you know, I think everyone expected to do extremely well. We had a great test at Daytona. The car is very good at Daytona. Struggled with a few things that were resolved for the race. But as you know, you unroll off the trailer feeling like we have a solid top five pace car. And every Lamborghini drives by you like they're in a DP car.
Well, it's a whole other story though, right?
It was a whole different story. Excuse me. But I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, that's not something we had control over. And mm-hmm. I think the team handled it well. And both cars, the 33 and the 93, were both in strong contention for, as you saw, a podium, but the 93, but the 33 equally as good, leading at one point, you know, in really good position. So the Sebring was a very similar experience. You know, all three drivers were very quick for the test there and felt really comfortable with the car first in a lot of the practice sessions, second in qualifying, and then was in contention right from the get-go. And then now the Ferrari is extremely strong from qualifying. But we expected that. You know, we saw in practice how strong the car was in practice and, you know, what they were able to do with it and then qualifying in the front row on pole. So I think we're right where we thought we were going to be. Unfortunately, the results haven't come the way they should. And at Daytona, you know, went behind to fix damage. At Sebring, lost a half shaft early, which was a shock because it was a new half shaft. So there was no reason for that to go. And, you know, we've been playing catch up in every race. But those guys never, ever, ever give up. You know, it's strange. It's kind of like, well, here's where we are. What do we have to do to make up time? And that's the gears change, and now we're making up time. That made up three laps out of the, I think, the five laps that we were down. And over 2 hours, two and a half, or 2 hours and 15 minutes was red flag. So we were robbed of a good portion of the race due to being stopped that we could have maybe gotten back on the lead lap. I think by the end of the race, I think the track changed so much that it went away from how good our car was, and it kind of started to make the other cars look, a lot of other teams look a lot better than they were earlier in the week. And that's just not something you can plan for because the track changed so much
right.
with all the rain and the downpour. And the way our car was the day before and the 2 days before, it was completely different as far as how it drove on pace. And I think it helped a lot of the other teams. And you can see the gap, the difference in the gap right there.
All right. So, you know, one of the things that kind of bummed me and Chad out earlier in the season was when the Le Mans list was publicized and the Viper was relegated to a reserve role, essentially like...
not just reserve role.
Like deep, like deep roving
rights on the list.
I was trying.
I was seventh.
Trying to be.
I was seventh.
About it. I know.
It was but horrible.
So, yeah, so you know, Chad and I were really bummed out about it. Yeah, but since
we really appreciate that you were bummed out. You should have heard Bill Riley.
Oh,
he was beyond bummed out.
I can only imagine.
I can hear him. I'm channeling his voice right now. Oh, really? Rick, you're bummed. You're bummed?
Yeah.
Okay, that's nice.
Well, at least for some of us, there's a silver lining to this story. So fast forward a little bit.
Yeah, no, there definitely is a silver lining. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, I think Bill, in a way, was the one cautious person and said, hey, you know, everybody, you know, our chances are good, but they're also the chances to be on the reserve are likely. So, you know, let's not get all excited. And even in all of the, every time I brought it up or someone asked about, you know, all the endurance races and Le Mans, I said, and maybe Le Mans. Like I always would say maybe because I remember that that's never, until February 5th, that's never a given. You're not right. automatically in unless you are automatically in. And while I expected that we may be on the reserve list like we were last year, we all kind of expected maybe we'd be closer to the top or have a better shot at it. And it's kind of, for me, the entire reason I had this great opportunity to race at Daytona and Sebring was, you know, in great part because they wanted to give us a better shot to be as a team to compete at Le Mans. And that's one of the goals. And they wanted to have their bronze driver work with the team, not just show up at Le Mans for the test day and run his 10 laps. And then, but they wanted, you know, to really add to what we did last year. So when that news came and, you know, I'm pretty much like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
So it wasn't disappointing. It was just gut wrenching. And, you know, I would get a text from Bill. It's like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm doing okay. He goes, I'm not. It's like, well, then me either. You know, like, wait, what do I want to say about that? I mean, it's just last year I remember standing there in pit lane watching the podium celebration and thinking, like, I need to come back here, and we need to be up there because and that's everything. That's where that experience is what I'm waiting for, so, and I want to work for. And when the news came that they were likely, and I kind of knew that they were likely going to pull the entry, the great opportunity for them is for Jerome and Ben is they can go compete now in P2, but you don't need a bronze in P2.
Right.
Which I walked into Sebring, you know, with a couple people, you know, pat me on the back. Sorry to hear about Lamar. And then sitting in practice or the day before qualifying, I got someone climb up on top of the Riley paddock, Riley pit box, and sit next to me and say, and shake my hand, introduce himself and said, I'd like to talk to you about running with us at Le Mans. He goes, would you be interested in that? And I didn't even let him finish. I said, yes, that sounds really good to me.
Like, really good.
Yes, I'm very interested. Should I get down right now and walk to wherever you want me to walk and talk about it? So, I mean, that kind of went back and forth for a few days to work out, you know, the arrangements. And as far as the drivers and the engineers and the team owners to meet me, we haven't really spoken, but the type of team that I race for now with Riley and Ben Keating and Jerome and every one of those guys, you know, the question I got asked was, well, what did, you know, Bill and Ben, and what do those guys think of it? I mean, they're a big reason why I got the opportunity, because they said,
no doubt,
you guys, if you're going to go and you want to have, you know, someone to go run Le Mans with, this is the guy we were going to take. You need to take him. And that was incredibly humbling to hear that. And for it to come to fruition was pretty incredible. So I'm really excited to go and have raced against, you know, Lee and Cooper and they're to sit down with them and have lunch and, you know, get to know them better was kind of great, because I didn't know them so well. So it was kind of interesting to kind of be in the GT paddock at Sebring racing a Viper and then having lunch with, you know, the WeatherTech Porsche guys to see if I was going to end up running with them. Le Mans was comfortably uncomfortable, I guess is the best way to say it.
Kind of surreal.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So I'm excited about having a great shot to go back and hopefully do my part to get us up on the podium.
Now, you know, going back, this is your second year. You're no longer a rookie. What are you most looking forward to going back to Le Mans this year?
Oh, I think just more track time. I mean, I think last year, with the help of Bill, really, I did a very good job of not being overwhelmed by the fact that I was at Le Mans. And I don't have that feeling anymore. Like, I want to go back. I want to go back to help a team win. I want to go back to not, you know, quote, experience Le Mans. I want to go win Le Mans. And it, in a way, it's kind of neat to be able to say, you know, hey, I'm going to go race a Porsche 911 at Le Mans. I mean, that's
pretty cool.
Pretty cool thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
And the team that, you know, we were racing with is, you know, in part the WeatherTech guys who have, you know, long history and of success. And then also Proton, one of the Proton cars, which was finished second last year. So we raced against them last year, and they were a really strong team. So we kind of know what we're getting into, which is really exciting.
All right. Now, Mark, I'm going to change it up on you a little bit, just because you've been with us enough that sometimes these things need a little shaking in a good way.
Okay.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Mark's already kind of, he should know what's coming.
I have to like drop oranges out of my arms all of a sudden after you start shaking.
It depends on the answers.
What kind of shaking are we talking about here?
IMSA fans shaking. This is coming from your fan appreciation page. And they, you know, knowing that you were going to be on, because I kind of let the cat out of the bag, they had some questions. Some of them were pretty good. One of them you already touched on about how the deal came together for Le Mans, but the others were more kind of the IMSA fans' way. So I'm just going to go through a couple. Take as much or as little time as you wish, because you know this group quite well as well. So
And you can edit it out.
Absolutely. All right. So Moncato had already asked about the WeatherTech deal coming together for Le Mans. He also asked, wanted to know if you believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
I answered that already. I had no idea he was an actor.
All right. Now, Burke wants to know what your workout plan is like. So, and just a little add-on, have you started working out dressed again? Because I know we had talked a little while before that sometimes it was clothing optional.
Oh, yeah. That was years ago. It's not an option anymore.
Okay. Thank you.
No, you get thrown out of the gym pretty fast with that.
I learned that.
So, too. I mean, after my accident at Sebring a couple years ago, I would go to a therapist, physical therapist, and I have a great, you know, where I live in Holland, Michigan is Acceleration Physical Therapy. It's a sports therapist place. And when I decided to do rehab, I wanted to go to I didn't want to go to a occupational therapist so that they can say, okay, well, you can walk and you can, you know, pull levers and put your, tie your shoes. And so you're back out in the working world. I wanted to come back and as a athlete and be stronger and better and be better at my job. So I wanted to go to a sports therapist, and they've been great to the point where after I was cleared, I said, I don't want to go to a gym. I want to continue to go to a sports therapist because my therapist is also a trainer. And, you know, she does an excellent job putting the program together for me. So last year I upped it quite a bit. I go more regularly, and I still have a gym that I built in my house to do stuff during the week, and I make time for it, you know, 5 times a week. Nice. And that's just one of those things I feel like I need to do to not just just to perform better. If you're getting opportunities to race more, then, you know, this is something I feel like I really need to work hard at. I kind of stepped it up another notch too. I have a friend who is a professor at Michigan State University that I visited. I actually spent a couple days over there touring the campus with my kids, but it's a professor of kinesiology, and he's worked with IndyCar drivers, Formula One drivers. And I've been able to go there and get assessed, you know, from a both physical and mental level with a sports psychologist, and then as well as, you know, a series of tests to see where I am and where I need to be, and all was done to prepare for to be peak performance level for Le Mans. And so I came back from that with a whole arsenal of butt kicking exercises that I needed to incorporate in my already, you know, hardcore workout routine with my trainer. So, you know, that professor, he's a great guy. His name is David Ferguson. He's actually visited Holland, where I live, and come to a training session. And, you know, I'm going to do another follow-up in May, but that's something I'm actively trying to just be better, because I believe not just in the GT car, but it's showed progress in our GS and our Cayman car and at the track. I'm just fitter, got more energy. I feel like I'm more prepared. And when I get in the car, especially after an hour and 40 minutes in the Cayman with no air conditioning, no blowers or cool suit, I feel great. I still feel great. At Sebring, it was a handful, and I could have gone another hour. So I'm real thankful for that. But, yeah, I've upped my routine quite a bit.
Nice. Now for a couple more that are more traditional IMSA fans-based questions. And I know you've seen these. Nate still looking for wanting to know if he can have a free trip to Le Mans. Any progress on that one other than just the raffle you mentioned?
I mean, you know what? I did do a little research on this.
All right, pay attention, Nate.
And I'm pretty I'm pretty sure there's other towns called Le Mans. somewhere. Nice. I don't know if it's Lamar, Indiana. I did look it up, and I thought there was another one, and there's bus tickets to that that they're really cheap. I mean, I don't know if I can do free, but I would buy a native bus ticket for that, I think.
Nice. All right, now,
what about a free screening of Le Mans at one of the races?
I would do that. The Steve McQueen movie on, what, a week or two ago?
Yeah.
So, and they're going to show it again right before the movie, so maybe just a PSA reminder, and there you go. You got yourself covered.
I know. There's not a lot. It's not like you have to have a quiet area because there's not a ton of dialogue.
There's really not. Yeah.
So we did watch the movie.
She watched it with me.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely watch it. You don't just listen to it.
Yeah.
You pretty much watch it.
Yeah. So. Now, you saw Woodski's question, but I don't know if you had ever answered it, about asking the terminal velocity of a swallow, but he didn't differentiate if he was looking for African or European.
Yeah, so European swallows 10 meters per second.
Nice. So, Woodski, there you go. And I did save the one from Jeremy Scott for last, since he was one of the original co-hosts of back then, Grand Am Unleashed. And he's still desperately wanting to know why you don't call when you're in town, and not just other people, but I think he was referring to him specifically.
Oh, yeah, so I wondered about that, because I always call when I come into town, but I just don't call him. So I think one of the reasons, because I don't have his number.
Well, that's a hell of a reason right there.
But I never asked for it, so I think we're both to blame for that.
But if he's not, readily giving it out, I mean, what are the expectations, really?
I know. I mean, if you live in a town like that, you need to be broadcasting.
There you go.
I mean, he's on the radio.
Yeah, put it out there.
He should be, like, doing traffic. He should just be shooting his number out there. Yep. To everybody.
You make a lot of friends.
Yeah, too many.
Well, on that one, that was all the questions I had from a little bit ago, the last time I looked at the page. So I think we hopefully have made the IMSA fans happy. And the ones that maybe weren't so appropriate for the show that, I couldn't have my kids listen to just quite yet, maybe we'll save those for another time.
So. Yeah, we can hold something like a private Q&A at the track.
There you go. Rich?
No, that's it, man.
That was a good note to end on.
How can I top that? I mean, I know the
thanks
the,
for all your input, Rich.
of a swallow. Actually, I had to look it up to make sure you weren't trying to pass one up on us, man.
It really, if you don't want to try to one up the IMSA fans group, you're just not going to win. So
no,
I think it's well played.
No, you gotta take it at face value.
Yes.
I will say, I hope we hear from you after Le Mans, man. You remember us little people, and maybe have you back on the show to talk about it.
I've been there before, and I'm back on the show.
Well, that was your rookie year,
Okay.
You know how drivers are.
I think what he's saying is this year you get the big boy pants, so it makes you a little bit different.
I don't really get too excited about anything until I'm actually there. It's kind of like a roller coaster ride. There's no reason to get excited about waiting in line. There's nothing exciting about waiting in line.
Well said.
You should be excited during the ride. So I hold all my excitement and reserve all of that stuff until I'm actually there doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, we will follow your advice and we will kind of toe the line. Keep our excitement to a dull roar until we have you back.
We'll try to contain the emotions.
Yeah, there you go. Dull roar. I like that.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for the time again, sir. And have a hellacious whole rest of the season. Conti, GTD, and a little bit of that Le Mans stuff.
Thanks. I'm excited.
Cautiously.
Cautiously excited.
Hey guys, this is Ryan DL, and you're listening to the Crazy Bunch of Grand Am. Oh, sorry, I mean Sports Car Unleashed.
All right, man, we're back, and it is time for some news. Man, that Mark Miller guy, he's all right, Chad.
Yeah, we kind of love that dude.
Yeah, we kind of do.
And we were talking about something him off recording that's really pretty cool, that there is a Lemons of Love, a big auction going on where you can bid on all kinds of racing memorabilia, driver suits. I know there's a big competition between Kuna Whitmer and Andy Lally's going on. Mark's got a driver suit in there. So it's all going for a really cool project where gift baskets are made for people who are going through chemotherapy. And since that kind of hits right at home for me, right now,
really close to home.
Because if you've never been in there, usually when you're getting chemotherapy, you're sitting in this chair for several hours. Well, basically, poison's being dumped into your body, and some of us have to go home with a pump of having two more days of that straight. So it gives people something to do while they're receiving their chemo. So it's going for an amazing cause, not just because it's affected my household, but it's, you know, everybody's known somebody who's been affected by this. So anything can do to just not think about what's going on, it means the world to everybody. So it's a great cause. We're going to link some things for our Facebook page and the website. And also you can go to Mark Miller's page, which has been completely revamped. So we'll put out a bunch of links there. But if you can in any way support this amazing cause, please do so.
I could think of way worse ways to spend your time and money.
Absolutely. So with that, let's hit some news. And I think this is, unfortunately, it kind of transitions right in because everybody probably should have seen by now that very recently Catherine Crawford, who is an engineer for the Deltawing, been involved in motorsports for years. Great. I mean, if you remember the Crawford Daytona prototype, that's her family's car. She had to have emergency surgery for a brain tumor while in Italy very recently. So please keep her family and her in your thoughts and prayers. Rich and I were talking about the report. It seems like her husband may have saved her life in reacting because it was started out as a bad headache, and that's when this was all discovered. So you hate it when it hits close to home like that.
Especially the good people, you know?
The Crawfords are amazing people, and it's just it's cancer sucks. There's no other way to say it without keeping it, you know, an R rating for us.
Right.
And also I saw head honcho of the Continental Series in the technical department, Jeff Mishtawa. He's been on a couple of times with us. Apparently, his wife Becky had just had a port put in, which is usually the first stage of what you're going in for when you're going in for chemotherapy. So, again, please keep both of them in your thoughts and prayers. Chemo's not fun. So, if it's on your mind and you can help out, Lemons of Love, this is the fantastic time to do so. All right, so let's get into more news that'll maybe put a smile back on our faces a little bit.
Okay, I could do some of that right now.
This one I think is going to be in Rich's wheelhouse. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this one yet because I know this is going to make him smile. Is IMSA has a new portable streaming device that debuted this spring.
We started to talk about it, but then we didn't.
Yeah. Now, with it, you get access to the live race feed, IMSA radio, and basic leaderboard, and you get a screen that's 6x4.5 inches, and it's not using – well, basically it's using UHF signals. So.
Right.
It's less interrupted. I know they sold out at Sebring and they were charging $39.95. And it was a little bit limited at Sebring because of the antennas. There just wasn't a lot out there. They're not going to do it at Long Beach just because the street courses are terrible for that kind of stuff. But look for it coming back pretty soon because apparently IMSA was very, very pleased with it. And feedback seemed to be pretty positive.
I love this. I mean, anything to keep the fans at the track engaged, because it can be a challenge at a track, you know, depending on where you're at in the track is and how powerful the PA system is. You know, I know a lot of times to kind of forget what's going on during yellow.
Yeah.
You know, I'll try to find the speakers. So okay, that's what's going on. Because, you know, let's be honest. If you're using the apps at the track, everyone else is, and, you know, that doesn't really work out very well.
Yeah.
So this is a great. I love it, and I hope that people support it, because I've wanted something like this for years, and they finally have it.
Yes, definitely in Rich's wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah. I'm a gadget guy.
Yes, sir. Now, moving over to some prototype news. It's kind of light, so this is more just reactions to the DPI class, because we talked last time about four manufacturers really being engaged and ready to go. Well, Orica, one of the four approved chassis manufacturers, has been in discussion with as many as five different manufacturers for the new class, but their confidence not so high that there's going to be that many of the new cars on the grid for the Rolex, just because of the timeline leading in this.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what we'd expect, though, wouldn't it be? I mean,
every new class starts out a little bit slow.
Yeah, and you know, they're still putting the final touches on things as far as like the rules.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
now what he was saying is that if approval's not done until September, there's just no way they have enough time to get the car done up for January. Well, September's still a little ways away. So, while he's not confident, it's all we know. Who knows? It's every time it seems like there's a good story about it, somebody follows up with one that's not doom and gloom, but maybe
cautiously optimistic. Right. Yeah.
So that is his opinion. So everybody's got one. Oh, that's why we have a show.
You know, and you know, and every manufacturer is going to have a different, you know, mileage may vary depending on who the manufacturer is too. So,
yes.
And Orica doesn't have much of a footprint in North America right now outside of the PC cars. So
exactly, I mean,
they got a little more to prove maybe than some of the other manufacturers.
They do, yeah, because you don't really want to hang your hat on that. Is
I'm not saying that they don't make fantastic race cars. I'm just saying they don't race them over here, and there is a learning curve, you know.
A little bit, yeah, because it's once that car debuted last year, it was immediately successful. But you're right, here it doesn't have the name recognition. So, another bit of news that's sort of in Rich's wheelhouse, because I'm just in a very giving mood this week. Andy Merrick is going to be filling in for Sean Rahal in his beloved Delta Wing at Long Beach, because Sean's going to be at the ELMS season opener in
Silverstone with our good friend Vicky Miller.
Yes. So,
and we'll talk more about that in a couple of weeks.
And moving over to our last bit of news, which is Pirelli World Challenge, is Kuno Whitmer, the one who's got close to, if not the highest, bidded currently driver suit for Lemons of Love. He's going to be joining Mills Racing in the BMW Z4 for the three-round Sprint X Championship beginning in Mosport. So really good place for the debut for him, being Canadian.
Yeah, it's home track. Awesome.
Absolutely. And for Mills Racing, they're going to do just the Sprint X for the rest of the season. That's all they're going to be doing. That's their sole focus. So look out for Kuno Whitmer. He's a factory BMW driver now, don't forget. So putting him in that car,
pretty doggone cool. Hey, Chad, that's in my wheelhouse too.
There you go.
You know what? In fact, this whole show is.
There you go. So I'm going to let Rich calm down for a moment, because I can, over the phone, hear his ego swelling.
I'm excited. I'm waiting for my wife to tell me to shush again.
Well, we'll take a quick break and be right back with some race previews.
Hey everyone, this is Dion von Moltke, and if you want to hear drivers get thrown under the bus, make sure you tune into Sports Car Unleashed every week.
All right, and we're back, and it's time for What's Up Next, Chad. So, Chad, what's up next?
Nothing in the immediate coming weekend. These are 10 days away as of recording, so the earliest you'll hear this, they'll be 9 days away. What we have is IMSA's WeatherTech Sports Car Series. And I'm sorry, this made me laugh when I read it, but it's great that there's a sponsor title for this, but it's the Bubba Burger Grand Prix at Long Beach.
Dude, I tell you, Long Beach has a storied history of, like, food for, remember, what's the chicken place in Waffles?
The Chicken and Waffles, yeah, when Magnus had him on the
car. In the LA area.
King Taco, they usually pull up something that's a little bit
tasty,
mainstream, but really not your. What I think a lot of, I'm not going to put my foot further in my mouth. It is the Bubba Burger Grand Prix.
Yeah.
It's going to be April 15th and 16th, and we'll go into the broadcast and the entries a little bit more next week and our sort of previews and predictions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joint weekend. They're all racing with IndyCars, which also means Pirelli World Challenge is going to be there.
Which is cool.
Yeah, their Grand Prix of Long Beach, same weekend. And we know there's going to be 24 cars. We'll do the breakdown on that one. So for sports car fans, it's great because the two best road racing series in America together in Long Beach. So,
yeah, I'd like to see that happen more.
Absolutely. And that is the up next.
All right.
And why don't we just go to page two, because that's also sort of short and sweet.
Why don't we do that, Chad?
Yes. Now, because Rich and I fought last week, I've tried to cater a lot of the news to make Rich very happy. Not really, it's just what was there, but he's in the good mood, so I don't think we're going to fight this week. So
our fights are so vicious.
I
right?
know. boob tube. Yes, right. It's kind of a big NASCAR weekend. Really, there's two races right now that are going on for four wheels. On Friday, April the 8th, you've got the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Texas on Fox Sports 1. And on Saturday, April 9th at 7:30 in the evening, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series also from Texas, and that's on Fox.
Cool.
So that is the boob tube. No movies or anything to kind of alert you to like we did for the Le Mans show about Steve McQueen. So
yeah.
And I couldn't find access to Showtime, so I did miss it. But that leads us to the geek out, social media kind of stuff. Rich?
Yes.
What do you got?
Oh, dude, I don't have anything this week.
You want to complain about the Forza car pack that came out today?
Well, the fact that I had to pay for it, even though I didn't buy it, first of all.
I would have had to pay for it.
Well, interested in yes, it. Okay. We should just call this Rich's Forza Corner, because this is like that's all I talk about on this show. So, the Top Gear pack came out today.
Yep.
I should know something was wrong when one of the new presenters was presenting in the video. I'm like, uh-oh. What do they have for cars? And it was a bunch of cars handpicked by the Top Gear talent.
Yes.
Need I say more? I'm sorry, I can't get excited about supercars. I'm just, I want race cars. I don't want supercars.
Yeah. Now, I will admit, I'm also not going to be buying it. The Ferrari is cool. But not enough worth the money.
The Hellcat was cool.
But
and the Jag I could even deal with.
But we got the coupe Jag, so I don't really.
Yeah.
To me, but a convertible
Rolls Royce, really?
In a Land Rover. Thank you.
Well, I get it. They're a British show, but I mean, come
but
on.
But it's a racing game. It's
exactly. Why don't give us some Ginettas or something, you know? Gee.
About another IMSA GTO car.
Yeah.
There's still some great ones that could be produced. I don't know. Dan
Gurney's Toyotas. Give us an old school Marcos or something. I mean,
yeah. Well, I'm really kind of waiting for either one of the old 80s Camaros or Corvettes.
Yeah.
You know, Protofab, they made some great cars back then.
I'm trying to stick with the British theme, Chad.
I don't.
It's careful.
I like careful. The old Top Gear. I'm not so okay. much feeling it.
Yeah, neither am I.
So.
Even though we haven't even seen it, we're already like saying, this sucks.
Yeah, let's just, we're old. We're like the old Muppets in the balcony.
And you do have Amazon, right? Amazon Prime?
I don't.
We need to get it because Jeremy Clarkson and company are going to be on that channel with a new show.
Yeah, I've heard about that. So it's people have been pushing me towards it. I mean, I'll have to cave eventually.
Yeah.
Speaking of caving, my geek out session is really nothing social media, video games, or anything related. Mine is more of the because tomorrow, Wednesday, will be my anniversary with my lovely wife and our producer. It'll be 14 years tomorrow. So, babe, I did not.
Wow.
She's awesome. Love of my life. So
dude, she's awesome, man. And you're lucky because I don't know how she deals with you.
I don't know why she does, but I'm grateful she does. I'm glad she married down a class once. Very happy about that. So
that makes two of us, man, because yes. We're at the show.
Yes. Love you, babe, and I'm referring to Sandra, not you, Rich. So,
I know you love me too, Chad.
Oh, sometimes, yes. And on that note,
well, I tell you what, it's fun to do two shows in a row. We're starting to get the momentum back, man. And I just want to thank everybody who didn't forget us.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll gain our listenership back here in the coming weeks, and we'll be back to where we were. And Chad's health will follow suit. We'll be running on all eight cylinders there.
Oh Oh, yeah, because we got some experience.
Because this is an American show.
Yes. We want American cars in our American games, damn it. And it's going to go – I think it's going to get real exciting when we can do our little expansion that Rich and I are incredibly excited about. So you guys hear some more voices rather than just these two yahoos.
And some more series that we don't necessarily cover that much. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it as well because I can't speak again. But
not a problem in a podcast.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, I feel like I'm gonna learn something from this person, so, which is really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of exciting stuff on the horizon, so.
Yeah, because, you know, I want to help me be a better fan. That's what I'm saying.
And I don't think we can say anything better than that, so.
Yeah, so we'll see you guys next week.